here watching Stockwatch with myself, Nastasia Aronsa. Tackling your questions in studio tonight is Derek Janse van Rensburg from Anchor Securities and Rikus Riedas from PSG Wealth Santon. Don't forget to send through those questions to us via SMS to 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za, or you can tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Gentlemen, thank you so much for your time. Let's take a moment, perhaps, before we even get to the questions, to reflect on the day's market performance. Derek, let's start off with you.
Yeah, I think it was a pretty boring start today. The market kind of wasn't sure which way it wanted to go, and it was a bit of a lackluster day until the late afternoon. We obviously saw some tweets coming from Trump and some news out of the ECB. Trump obviously basically indicating that he's going to have extended meetings with China at the G20 summit. So the market caught a bit of a wind into the late afternoon. There was certainly a bit of a risk on trade taking place. Our market finished up nicely positive. And I think the rest of the world, or call it the US markets, have also got a bit of momentum behind them. So all in all, not a bad day on the market.
Rikus?
Yeah, I think it was certainly driven by ECB and Draghi indicating that quantitative easing going forward is quite possible, and that's in the euro low, it's in the rand stronger. It was very good for our financial and retail stocks. And that's only the first sort of bank that's had an indication. We've also got Japan meeting this week, and of course the Fed tomorrow. So it's all sort of looks like a race to the bottom as far as interest rates are concerned.
Right. So when it comes to the Fed, there are those who sit on the camp saying that we might not see a cut tomorrow, but we'll likely see one at least by September somewhere there. Then Goldman Sachs, on the one hand, will say something like, the conditions in the US at this point do not warrant a cut. And then Morgan Stanley says, well, if we don't get a cut, we'll be sorely disappointed, specifically on the stock side of things. Where do you sit in terms of whether you really want to cut tomorrow, or you're willing to have a hold, but at least see some kind of signal that would indicate a cut?
So, I mean, just looking at it from a very high level perspective, I mean, I just can't believe the stock turnaround that we've seen in a 6-month period where, you know, you had US Treasuries trading beyond the 3 mark and coming right down to sort of 2.1 type levels, which indicates, you know, that there's a potential cut on the cards. let's be honest. I mean, the macroeconomic environment from a US perspective is extremely strong. The data coming out there indicates that the economy is strong and alive and pushing forward. So, you know, to say that we should cut interest rates at this point and we're concerned about growth looking forward, yeah, everyone would be concerned about growth looking forward, but the data, to me, doesn't warrant a cut, if that makes sense. The market's certainly going to read quite a lot into the tone looking forward, and markets tend to price in an expectation, call it 3 months from here, 6 months from here. So I think the key is really about the underlying tone that's delivered through the Fed meeting, in that, if the economy starts to falter, are they going to be prepared to rapidly cut and adjust quickly to call it a consolidating type environment from a macroeconomic perspective? So personally, I don't think that the current environment warrants a cut, but certainly it's the tone looking forward that the market's going to look into. And you can see in the price action already, just across the global arena, there's certainly a risk on trade. So, you know, people are pricing in a potential cut. But again, I think there's going to be more focus on that tone looking forward.
Rikus, your thoughts?
Yeah, specifically, I wouldn't expect a cut tomorrow, but July, August, who knows? And as Derek said, it's the tone of tomorrow's meeting. A lot of people are going to look at that because a lot of expectation has been built into it. And the expectation is that the tone is going to be dovish, which is why equity prices are up, the gold price is up. So if that expectation is not met, then the rally we've seen over the past week or so might actually just come to a bit of a halt.
All right, cool. So let's get right into the question. So the first question for tonight is, what property stocks would the panel recommend? And that text is from Franco.
So I think if you just look at the listed property sector in South Africa, you need to be quite specific, because there is certainly a split between, call it, Rand hedge property stocks and very much locally listed South African stocks. And as we all know, from a South African perspective, the economic environment is really tough out there. You know, vacancy rates are high. The ability to escalate increases on an annual basis is getting that much tougher as we go into this environment where we had GDP data and growth down 3.2%, the recent print. So you need to be quite specific in how you split it. So, you know, just from an SA Inc. perspective or SA property stock perspective, at this point of the cycle, I would stay to your big heavyweight, big players with big portfolios, their ability to carry the balance sheets going forward, your growth points, potentially some redefines, but certainly growth point comes out as a top pick there. And then you can look from an offshore perspective at something a little bit more spicy, maybe something in the Eastern European space that's still got a bit of growth associated with it, but the global arena puts a little bit more risk on it. Something like a mass real estate or even an Eco Polska also looks quite interesting.
All right, Rikus?
I agree with Derek as far as the local stocks are concerned. Growth Point specifically, I was looking at that price graph, and that seems to have stabilized. Yeah. But if you're overexposed to retail and you've got a lot of debt, you've got a problem as far as local property stocks are concerned. If you want to go offshore in the local market, in other words, locally listed, then it's UK, sort of developed Europe, and Eastern Europe. Eastern Europe is interesting, I think you call that sort of exciting. So maybe if the retail space there keeps on happening, but in the more sort of developed Germany, France type of environment, looking at what's happening with German confidence figures and Draghi's whole spiel about growth going forward and then having to throw more money at the market, maybe that's in for a little bit more of a difficult time for the next 6-12 months. Mm. The UK is anybody's guess with Brexit, as far as I'm concerned.
All right. So Craig wants to know, and his question says, Bidvest recently announced that they bought another 5% of Adcock from the PIC. Previously, there were sellers. Now there are buyers. Can we expect a buyout of minorities, maybe?
I think you can subscribe to a view to that point, but obviously it's all speculation. I have been watching that, so it does look like it's getting packaged up for a potential delisting, and hopefully you see a few higher prices from an Adcock perspective. And actually looking at those fundamental numbers underneath Adcock, it's actually surprisingly done all right. You know, in a very tough economic environment, they've certainly delivered a consistent set of results, which is, you know, something to salute in an environment where there's certainly a lot of contraction, when it comes to definitely the retail exposed stocks and generally across the board. So, it's certainly earmarked for a potential takeout. What premium? Difficult to say. So how much is in it is anyone's guess, but I don't think too much higher than where it is at the moment.
Any thoughts on this one?
Yeah, it would be a pity to lose that if it doesn't, if it does get taken out. Because if I consider where Adcock was as a company a few years ago and the return to growth and the return to very good management that they've done over the past few years, I would have liked to have been able to stay invested in that going forward, considering that they are a major market player in a very necessary but difficult environment.
All right. So this next question is from Benny, and he says, if one takes a scenario that there is no tax implications, what would be the best option? Take up shares in NewCo or take the 3-to-1 option and increase your Naspers portfolio? Also, is there a method to determine a possible entry-level share price for NewCo?
If there was no tax implication, I would personally want to own NewCo in its entirety, but obviously tax is certainly a consideration from just looking back to the sort of mid to 2005 times to where we are. There's been massive share price appreciation. So You know, NewCo is obviously going to hold the international assets and obviously Tencent directly. And, you know, if you just look at the locally listed NASPAs post this NewCo listing, you're essentially going to own 75% of NewCo that then owns Tencent. So there's, call it another middleman in the picture before you get to your ultimate holding in Tencent at the end of the day. So I wouldn't be surprised if you see, if we look at Tencent as call it a rump of the business, NewCo will probably trade at a bit of a discount to that, and I think Naspers will trade at slightly more of a discount than the NewCo discount. So I would be inclined to holding the NewCo alongside some of the international assets.
Rikus?
Yeah, I agree with Derek, but I think you can't, you cannot not have a tax consideration, because the tax consideration is the major input variable in that whole scenario.
So
in a perfect world, NewCo, because obviously then you're going to have a spread geographically and also currency.
Just to add to it, I mean, NewCo is going to be a substantial listing from an offshore perspective. So, you know, in terms of getting, let's just call it emerging market tech exposure, there's certainly going to be appetite for this NewCo listing when it does come to market from a global perspective. So it's certainly going to make up a percentage of a lot of portfolios, and there's going to be some natural buying that takes place into this NewCo listing. So again, I just think it will trade at less of a discount to the Naspers holding.
Before we go to an ad break, perhaps you want to take this one, Derek, because I can't ask our friend here at the desk. It is around, let's see, Stadio. So the question is, should I remain patient with this one, seeing that Stadio listed at 8 Rand and it's now sitting at 3 Rand 15?
I think you should. And I think Stadio is actually a great business. I think that if you just divide it, so it obviously came out of Curra. And the Stadio basically represents the tertiary side of that Curra business post the unbundling. So if you just look at the tertiary side of that business in Stadio in its entirety, I think it's kind of climbing its way out of a very exciting J curve. Okay, regardless of what the chart looks like and what the demise of the share price has done, I think that you know, the ability to study from home and to have remote learning and the cost of infrastructure is very different to Curra, where it costs quite a lot of money to set up a school, build it, have your students come in, whereas your ability to scale up in a company like Stadio is a lot greater. So, you know, that ability to scale up certainly increases your profit margins, and I don't think that they've quite hit that sweet spot where you see that increased profit margin generation. So I'm a shareholder, and I will be a shareholder for some time to be.
All right, then. With that said, let's take a quick break. Keep sending through your questions via SMS to 41392 or email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za. Welcome back. Taking a look at the markets picture, starting off with things in the U.S. It's green across the board with the NASDAQ up 1.4%. Of course, stocks up after President Trump said he might meet, well, rather he will meet President Xi Jinping at the G20 meeting. Over in Europe, stocks also closed in positive territory with the French CAC up 2.2%. So with me in studio is Derek Janser van Rensburg from Anchor Securities and Rikus Riedas from PSG Wealth Centen. Gentlemen, the next question is, and I like these types of questions because I always assume that those who watch Stockwatch are those who are already participating in the market and they're very active, and they're those who are looking to participate. So this question says, do I have to be debt-free to start investing? I am 40 years old.
No, you don't. I mean, obviously there's a heightened level of risk that comes to speculating in the market when you've got debt under your belt. But I think that it's a completely unique asset class in that, you know, provided you understand, do the homework and, you know, kick the tires on companies and understand what drives share prices up and down essentially, there's certainly always an investment case. So, you know, you obviously sit in a position where debt could cost you, let's call it 10% per annum. And the difference is if you are going to go into equities, are you going to make a return in excess of 10%? And if the answer to that is no, then it makes sense to actually pay off your debt. And it's been a very tough market environment for the last 4 or 5 years. So to eke out circa 10% returns on an annual basis has not been easy.
Yeah.
So it's actually paid to keep your money in cash / pay off debt under the current environment looking 3 years back. So if you believe that you can make in excess of that 10% return, then have a look at some equities.
Rikus, your thoughts?
Yes, if your debt is expensive, in other words, don't go and buy shares on your credit card, for example, because it's going to be very difficult to get a return that can pay you the interest back on that. But it boils down to financial planning. If you've got debt, do you have a plan to pay it off? Are you comfortable that you will be able to do it, considering what your income stream is? And then it makes sense, as Derek said, to rather than, you know, pay off your house for the next 20 years and lose the opportunity to use some of your income stream to actually generate above average returns. It doesn't make sense to wait for the one before you start with the other. But you have to be very sure that you're not going to run into trouble with your current debt level and your ability to pay it off.
Okay. The next question is around life health care, and Bernard wants to know, so he says that the Life Healthcare share price reached a long-time low today. Its financials were quite positive. Is it a buy?
So I think if you just look at the sector in its entirety and you look at the things like a Life Healthcare, a Mediclinic, even something like a Netcare, you know, these are stocks that have really been battered to levels that obviously dictate what's going on out there from an economic perspective. So if you go look at the fundamentals of life healthcare, call it 22.50 rand, I must say it's starting to look interesting. You know, I personally need to do a little bit more homework on it and just understand where the growth is going to come from, looking sort of 6 months, 12 months and 18 months from where we're at. So I guess it's about timing. You know, I'm interested in it and I need to do some more homework on it. But I'd like to get my timing right, and it might mean waiting for the next set of financials to really understand whether we've seen a bottoming out of, call it the healthcare sector as a group, and hopefully, you know, by that point we can start to see signs of a little bit more growth coming back to the fore from a macroeconomic perspective.
Rikus, is life healthcare one that you've looked at?
Yes, I've also noticed that 22.50 was the previous low. I think it closed 1 cent above it today. But as far as the financial health of those three companies, Netcare, Mediclinic, and Life Healthcare is concerned, Life Healthcare is probably in the better position. But at a historic price earnings of about 27.5, it's still expensive. It really needs the wind filling the sails as far as earnings going forward to justify that kind of PE. I don't think it's there yet. Apart from the fact that I don't like things which are in a downturn or which are on a downtrend and are making new lows or are about to make new lows. Mm. So timing going forward.
Okay. Charles van der Walt wants to know about Tuchasan.
So again, you know, this is a gaming asset and you can kind of, it's very different. So I'm grouping it with like a Sun International,
yeah.
But it's a very different business to Sun International. I think Tuchasan is a lot healthier and better position than a Sun International. And my only concern is you're exposed to, call it, the gaming space in South Africa and ultimately gambling, which is, you know, really a discretionary spend, you know. And we're in an environment where the consumers is feeling the pinch. And I think that's across the spectrum from all LSM classes at the moment. So I think, you know, that discretionary spend is just not quite there, but they have managed to actually weather the storm in South Africa quite well. So, you know, I am keeping my eye on it. And again, I think it's probably going to stay around these levels for the short term. And, you know, it's something where you want to monitor the financials on an ongoing basis, look at the next set of results, and kind of see signs of a bit of growth. But I think the management are commendable in terms of the way that they've managed this company in a very tough economic environment.
Rickest, yeah,
if we're talking about the split-off company, just the gaming operations that now resides in Tiger Sun, yeah, it's a cash machine, if I can use that word, but it's also a volume story. The more people gamble, the better it is for the cash flow on that company. But consumers are under pressure. They are saving like crazy, and there's not a lot left for discretionary spend afterwards. So you need the right kind of economic environment for that to really start pumping.
Okay. So the next question is around Dis-Chem.
So Dis-Chem is a stock that we actually quite like. Mm-hmm. It does sit on quite a lofty PE, and I personally tend to kind of monitor the relationship between Dis-Chem and Clicks quite closely. Mm-hmm. And Clicks is an SA love stock. Mm-hmm. You know, this is really traded on a lofty multiple for as long as I can remember, and rightly so. They've delivered consistent earnings year on year on year on year. And Dis-Chem, relatively new to the market. There's a big plan with Dis-Chem to roll out quite a significant number of new stores, and it's all about that new store implementation and the new store growth that talks to the lofty PE that we see in Dis-Chem. So trading at about 25 Rand 80, and you also, one gets the sense this is becoming, call it an SA inflow, you know, as for example we saw a risk on trade take place where, you know, our market caught a bid in the latter part of the afternoon. Dis-Chem was up 4.7% today. So, you know, I think that the recent strike action that they underwent certainly detracted from earnings in the short term, but I think that was a once-off. So looking forward, if they can just deliver on what the market's expecting and stick to the strategy, roll out the stores, then I think this is a quality company that one can buy, stick it away, and I think you'll be pleasantly surprised over the next 3 to 5 years.
Is Dis-Chem one that you like, Rickus?
I'm probably a little bit too conservative because, again, I take a look at valuation. As you said, they have to get it right. And I'm just wondering, okay, so what other retail stocks are there? Are we looking at, it's not the same target market, but let's face it, all South African consumer stocks at the moment have been sold down. And if we get a surprise, I won't even say to the upside as far as growth is concerned, but less pessimistic views going forward, are retail stocks in general going to catch a bid? And what will not only the local investor, but the foreign investor be focusing on? It will be things like Dis-Chem and Clicks. It will also be other shares which are probably valued at lower multiples, and I mentioned sort of things like Fashini and Trueworths. So it's a relative game, and I'd rather be have a little bit more protection on the downside by going in something which is maybe not at that, I won't say priced to perfection, but a very dear valuation. But that's just personal. I mean, maybe I'm being too conservative and too pessimistic.
All right, quick one before we get to your stock pick. Stephen wants to know, Vodacom versus MTN. Who wants to take that one? Mm. Derek is smiling so much.
No, I'm happy to take it. So, you know, Vodacom, to me, has reached very much a point of saturation when it comes to the South African cellular market. So MTN, on the other hand, has got the optionality behind it. It's been in the news for a slug of the wrong reasons, and obviously there's Nigerian issues that they've had to put behind them and fines that had to be paid and settled. And I just get the feeling that a lot of the bad news in MTN is behind it. And if we look at a growth stock, would I rather own Vodacom or MTN? It would be MTN. Mm-hmm. I think Vodacom is very cash generative, and it's certainly going to spit out very comfortable dividends in the near term, but I want an element of growth. So I would sway towards MTN at the current prices of around 106.
Okay, cool. Let's get to stock picks. Rickus?
It's a US stock called LabCorp, and they are basically, medical laboratories, mm-hmm. and they're one of the big players in the US, if not the biggest. Basically, they were under some pressure. The price has recovered somewhat. They're sitting on a price earnings of about, or forward price earnings of about 13, which doesn't make them expensive. They, as I said, they are the one of the major players in that market, and they're busy doing a lot of interesting stuff as far as digitizing processes is concerned, gaining market share, and also dealing with Medicare, which have reduced their margins somewhat. Mm-hmm. But they are adjusting to that, and I think they're the right kind of company in an aging population in a developed market. And if you're worried about emerging markets, whether it be MTN or South Africa in general, that's the kind of, I would say, almost safety that I would like to see in a portfolio.
Okay, Derek?
I'm going to choose Old Mutual, South African stock. I haven't chosen one for a while. But I think that the share price in the short term got battered on the back of the unknowns around why the CEO is leaving, and the chart can tell you that story from kind of September-ish and obviously through the course of this year. Sitting at about 21 Rand 60-ish, I think it's probably one of the cheapest I've seen it in quite some time. I don't see this running off to the races and kind of, you know, bolstering towards 28 Rand in the near term. But, you know, in a market where things are benign, going sideways, I think you need to be very specific about picking quality and paying very special attention to fundamentals. So it could remain cheap for a while around these levels, but I'm quite happy with the current entry price if you just look at those fundamentals and take a 3 to 5 year view looking forward. So I think it's well positioned for potential growth if South Africa can just show those macroeconomic signs of us growing out of the issue that we're in at the moment.
All right, gentlemen, thank you so much for your time. Those are my guests, Derek Jansen van Rensburg from Anchor Securities and Rikus Riedes from PSG Wealth Centen. We take more of your stock-related questions tomorrow. Have a good evening. Let's get to stock picks, Rikus.
It's a U.S. stock called LabCorp, and they are basically medical laboratories, mm-hmm. and they're one of the big players in the U.S., if not the biggest. Basically, they were under some pressure. The price has recovered somewhat. They're sitting on a price earnings of about, or forward price earnings of about 13, which doesn't make them expensive. They, as I said, they are one of the major players in that market, and they're busy doing a lot of interesting stuff as far as digitizing processes is concerned, gaining market share, and also dealing with Medicare, which have reduced their margins somewhat. Mm-hmm. But they are adjusting to that, and I think they're the right kind of company in an aging population in a developed market. And if you're worried about emerging markets, whether it be MTN or South Africa in general, that's the kind of, I would say, almost safety that I would like to see in a portfolio.
Okay, Derek?
I'm going to choose Old Mutual, South African stock. I haven't chosen one for a while. But I think that the share price in the short term got battered on the back of the unknowns around why the CEO is leaving, and the chart can tell you that story from kind of September-ish and obviously through the course of this year. Sitting at about 21 Rand 60-ish, I think it's probably one of the cheapest I've seen it in quite some time. I don't see this running off to the races and kind of, you know, bolstering towards 28 Rand in the near term. But, you know, in a market where things are benign, going sideways, I think you need to be very specific about picking quality and paying very special attention to fundamentals. So it could remain cheap for a while around these levels. But I'm quite happy with the current entry price if you just look at those fundamentals and take a 3 to 5 year view looking forward. So I think it's well positioned for potential growth if South Africa can just show those macroeconomic signs of us growing out of the issue that we're in at the moment.
All right, gentlemen, thank you so much for your time. Those are my guests, Derek Jansen van Rensburg from Anchor Securities and Rikus Riedes from PSG Wealth Centen. We take more of your stock-related questions tomorrow. Have a good evening. We'll be right back.